In a world where action films are dumped in theaters and TV, dead on arrival.
I can't go on living this lie!
You need a hero.
Last time I trusted someone, I lost an eye.
You need a helper.
Hello, hello, nothing to see here.
You need a healer.
That is affirmative.
You need...
We're on the air.
Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy.
Like the man said, this is Action Film Autopsy. My name is Mike Robb, but the guy who knows exactly what the autopsy is all about is the guy who's going to take you through this week after week after week with all sorts of exciting things. And the man with the exciting plan is you, Rick Myers.
Hi, everybody. It's Rick Myers. Welcome to the first Action Film Autopsy, or as we sort of renamed it, Professor Rick's Action Film Autopsy, or Prof. Rick's Action Film Autopsy. I didn't even tell you our secret subtitle, How They Should Have Fought, but we'll get into that soon.
All right, so wait a minute. Exactly what is this?
This is a podcast that is the culmination of my entire movie-going life. My first adult film was Dr. No, but prior to that, back in when I was growing up, there were children's matinees where you would go and see a cartoon and a serial, you know, a chapter from an old-time cliffhanging serial, and then like a Tarzan movie or something like that. And that's where I discovered my first hero, which was Bugs Bunny. Bugs Bunny is still my hero. He's still one of the smartest screen fighters there are. I met James Bond. I very quickly, after that, went and read every James Bond book. And then when I saw the Sherlock Holmes movies and the James Bond movies, I got involved in writing novels. I wrote Dirty Harry novels. I wrote Destroyer novels. I wrote books on science fiction films, fantasy films, exploitation films. And I wrote, I told you Dirty Harry. And I had just come from the set of the first Christopher Reeve Superman movie in England, where I was reporting for Starlog magazine. Superman, when I was on the set, Lex Luthor, played by Gene Hackman, his assistant, his hulking assistant, was played by Peter Boyle, as a reunion, in a way, from when they played the blind man and the monster from Young Frankenstein. But when the movie came out, Peter Boyle was nowhere to be seen, replaced by Ned Beatty. The director, Richard Donner, had put up signs saying verisimilitude, which means make it real. And so I was looking forward to it all being real. And then Otis shows up, Mr. Luthor. I mean, just an idiot. My father worked in the mental retardation and the mental health field. So I've met a lot of trainably retarded adults as well as the mentally ill, and no one acted like Otis. So it kind of spoiled the movie for me. So I'm in Larry Hama's office, and I'm complaining, why don't people make serious superhero movies? They don't have to be without humor, but the humor shouldn't come from outside the movie, like in a James Bond movie with a double-taking pigeon or, you know, some other nonsense that really isn't true. It's just latched onto the film. So Larry said, follow me. And we went downtown in New York. We went to a place that no longer exists called the Bleecker Street Cinema, and I saw Baby Cart in the Land of Demons, which was the fifth movie in the Baby Cart series, which was a samurai series. And Lone Wolf and Cub, it was also known as. And I was just astonished. I was blown away. It was so amazingly well done. It was so serious. It was taken seriously. It had humor in it, but the humor didn't come from what I call outside the movie. And I was thrilled. I said, oh my gosh, I've got to find out more about these movies. But Larry said, no, no, wait, we're not done. And literally from that movie, he brought me down to Chinatown in New York, where there was six movie theaters showing only Hong Kong films, two different Hong Kong films in every theater every week. So that's 12 new Hong Kong movies. And we saw Drunken Monkey in a Tiger's Eye, which you may or may not know better as Drunken Master, Jackie Chan's second big, huge blockbusting hit. And that, to me, was a daredevil movie come to life. But more than that, there was not this fake choreography. Over the years, we've become enamored in America of the roundhouse punch, which is closed fist.
You can hurt somebody with a fish.
Well, of course, in the Monty Python, they have the great fish dance, and that's also great action. But in America, we're used to closing our fists, using our muscles, using anger to drive our fists into someone else's face. In Jackie Chan movies, he's not trying to punch anybody. He's trying not to be punched. He's using everything he has and everything around him not to be punched, to avoid fights. And that spoke to me. It was interesting because that was 1978. And I already seen the Bruce Lee movies in 1972 and 3, but that didn't galvanize me, because that didn't speak to me, because Bruce Lee liked hitting and getting hit. He liked meeting out punishment, and he liked getting punishment. Because of my upbringing, I don't like getting punished. I don't like getting hurt. I don't like hurting anyone else. So when I saw Jackie Chan in Drunken Master, that was just like a revelation to me. And I, from then on, I saw every kung fu movie I could see down in Chinatown at the 6 different movie theaters, with the 2 new movies every week at every theater. And I discovered a guy named La Cal Young and his amazing movies like 36 Chamber of Shaolin. I've seen as many as I could. And I instantly went to work writing a book on the subject, which came out, I think, in the mid-80s, called Martial Art Movies from Bruce Lee to the Ninjas. I didn't want to put ninjas on the cover because ninjas are idiots, but the publisher demanded it because everybody thought ninjas were hot and cool at that point. Hot and cool. Huh, that's an interesting comparison. And in any case, so I loved action films. I wrote about action films in fiction and in nonfiction. And over the years, I've become known for it. I went to work for Inside Kung Fu. For 20 years, I've been doing the San Diego Comic-Con Superhero Kung Fu Extravaganza, which got me a job on the first Kung Fu Panda and on the Kung Fu Panda Nickelodeon show. I went to work for Asian Cult Cinema Magazine. I wrote for Action Films Magazine. I was the animation editor, the New York commercial animation editor for Millimeter Magazine. I did all this stuff, and it's all just great, and I really love every second of it. But recently, as I've gone through nearly 20 years of the San Diego Comic-Con Kung Fu Extravaganza, I've been noticing that action has changed. For a while, with the influence of the success of Jackie Chan and Jet Li and others in America, Yun Wu Ping, who choreographed Jackie Chan, did the action direction in Drunken Master, went to work for The Matrix and Kill Bill, and his family went to work on Charlie's Angels, the movies. And so that influence began to make action in movies a little more fluid and a little more smart and a little more involving. And then there seemed to be a backlash. It was a secret backlash. Certain companies seemed to be doing everything they could to minimalize the Asian action effect on American movies. So in one movie, say GoldenEye, James Bond was really good at martial arts. And in the next movie, he was back to doing roundhouse punches. And this happens a lot. Matter of fact, it just happened on the new Jason Bourne movie. In earlier Jason Bourne movies, he was really good at fighting. He would use like rolled up newspapers and a book and all sorts of stuff. And in this new one, it's just back to closed fist, anger, muscle driven. In fact, the very first thing you see him do in the new Jason Bourne is punch a guy in the face with his fist. And it's like, who is that Jason Bourne? That's not the Jason Bourne I recognize. I also noticed on television, and there's a lot of action on television now, but the one thing I kept noticing is that virtually none of it was involving. None of it was interesting. It was all like exactly the same. I said it last year's Kung Fu Extravaganza, and again at this year's Kung Fu Extravaganza. It used to be that when somebody fought, you would know who was fighting by the way they fought. In other words, a little woman would not fight the same way as a big guy. But now everybody fights exactly the same, to the point that you could switch the heads of characters on a television fight scene and it wouldn't affect the fight in any way. And it's gotten so bad at this point, you could take characters from one show and put them in another show, and it still wouldn't affect the fight in any way. It became what I called empty movement. And empty movement was really hammered home to me with the Star Wars prequels. In the original Star Wars trilogy, we're speaking chronologically here, the action was based on samurai movies. So the action, and if you go see any samurai movie, any classic samurai movie made in Japan, you will see that the action is involving, the action is emotional, the characters do it uniquely. Matter of fact, I'll jump ahead a little bit and just compare the Suicide Squad fight, the major Suicide Squad fight at the end, to the major fight at the airport in Captain America: Civil War. In Captain America: Civil War, you knew everybody, you knew their powers, and they fought in their own characters and with their own powers. In Suicide Squad, it was just again, kind of a waste of time, kind of empty movement, because everybody did basically the same thing. Although the Will Smith character shot people, he didn't have a moment. He had a scene where he shot people, but you didn't know where the bullets were going. They just were going. You could see that he was doing something awesome, but you didn't see what he was doing that was awesome. And in the Captain America fight, everybody had a moment of awesomeness, culminating in when Ant-Man became Gi-Ant-Man, which was one of the first times in years that I've legitimately felt thrilled watching an action scene. So things have changed. When I started my career almost 40 years ago, you know, I was writing on a pad with a pencil, and then I went to a typewriter, and then I went to a computer, and then I went to magazines, and I went to books. Well, I went to comics, I went to animation, I went to movies, I went to television. And now things seem to be segueing everything onto the internet. So I said, hey, I would like to do a podcast where I can champion good action movies and criticize bad action movies, and maybe have an influence on how action movies are made. And I'll get all my friends, because over the 40 years, I've met a lot of people in action movies. I wrote the official magazine for Moonraker, so I got to meet all the James Bond people. And I've been in Hong Kong a bunch of times, and I met all the Kung Fu people. And, of course, I wrote the Dirty Harry novels, so I met all the Dirty Harry people. So I knew a lot of folk. And I knew a lot of folk who did the stuff that I loved, which is action direction, or choreography in the case of Hong Kong. And I said, I want to talk to them and talk about their love of action films and try to communicate to people all over the world via podcast the way I communicate to a couple of thousand every year at the San Diego Comic-Con and the dozens of fans I have from my 40 years of writing books and magazines and working on 350 different international DVDs. So that's the idea of the podcast. Originally, it was going to be called How Not to Fight. But the easiest way, How Not to Fight, is simply not to fight. So I subtitle it How They Should Have Fought. So the plan is that I'm going to do reviews, and then maybe alternately every other episode will be with a guest, and then it may all mingle, because we hope to do episodes on James Bond, multiple episodes on James Bond, because I've already had a bunch of friends saying, oh, I want to do the James Bond episode. And since there are so many James Bond movies, we might break that into parts. And eventually, what I'm really hoping to do, as I get better at this and I develop the podcast itself, I'd love to start doing video podcasts. What I plan to do in the autopsy is take apart action scenes, but then hopefully put them back together again and tell you how I think the fight scene would have been better if it had been more in character, if there had been more emotion, if they communicated more story and more character through the action. And I know that can be done because I've seen hundreds of movies that do it. I've been told by more than one action director, and hopefully we'll have them on the podcast before too long, that their only instructions from the producer and the director was to make the fight look cool. Just make it look cool. And it's like, yeah, okay, it looks cool, but that also makes it kind of boring, and it also makes it kind of wasted time and empty movement. And I'd like to see if we can change that. So ultimately, after telling you how the fight should have been done, and we'll get into specifics because there'll be other episodes which will just be reviews of new and upcoming and old action movies and television series, I hope to do a video version where we get to show you an action scene that I think that could be improved from an actual movie or television show. And then me and my friends, which include some of the greatest kung fu practitioners in the world, redo it the way we think it should have been done or it would have been better. Wow, that was one question.
Wow. Well, let me... Okay, I'm going to go back a little bit.
It's not getting me to talk. It's getting me to shut up.
Let's go back to Jackie Chan for a second.
Yes.
And the time when you first saw him on the screen?
In Drunken Master, yes.
Did you correlate that as a fight, or did you ever think back that maybe this is actually something that started, well, was back as far as silent movies went, almost in the days of Buster Keaton?
Well, absolutely. Jackie Chan's two great movie idols are Buster Keaton and Gene Kelly, the great musical dancer. And I met Jackie shortly thereafter and have been friendly with him since 1978 when I first met him. So I know all his antecedents. So yes, I immediately, because by then I had already seen virtually every Harold Lloyd movie, Charlie Chaplin. And in my movie, I did a documentary, which is available on DVD and on download, called Films of Fury, the Kung Fu Movie. And it was slightly controversial within the kung fu film-loving world, that I clearly said that our first great action stars, and specifically kung fu stars in movies, were Charlie Chaplin, Harold Lloyd, Buster Keaton, and the rest of the silent comedians. Because, as I've also made it clear in my writings and in my seminars and things like that, kung fu is not martial arts. Martial arts is fighting. Kung fu is self-improvement, where the ability to defend yourself against people, germs, stress, yourself. Jet Li always says that the kung fu student's only true opponent is themselves, comes as a side effect. The ability to defend yourself comes from a side effect of your self-improvement. So I always try to tell people, that's why my latest book, Films of Fury, the Kung Fu Movie book, is only about kung fu movies and just slightly touches on martial arts movies. I make a clear distinction the way I would make between, say, dim sum and sushi. One is Japanese, one is Chinese. And again, when I went to work at being the consultant, the kung fu consultant at the first Kung Fu Panda movie, I asked if they had done research already, and they had told me they had watched Seven Samurai. And I said, well, you're making a baseball movie and you're watching football films. So people were saying, oh, isn't it all the same? Isn't karate and kung fu the same? I said, isn't baseball and football the same? No, it's not. They're both sports, but they're not the same. And it's also very clear. Jet Li, I love Jet Li. Jet Li is, I believe Jet Li is what Bruce Lee would have become, because Bruce Lee died so young. He would have developed, he would have returned to his family Tai Chi style. He would have understood that fighting is not the most important thing. Stopping fights is important things. Making the enemy your friend is important. And how to redirect the fight in a way that was more enjoyable, entertaining, constructive, funny, and interesting, which is what he was doing, but he would have developed more. But Jet Li said that when he went to work in America on Lethal Weapon 4, he said, you know, both America and Asia make a movie in a month, but in America, they work on the fight scene for a week, and they work on the drama for 3 weeks. In Hong Kong, they work on the drama for a week and the fight scenes for 3 weeks, which is why, invariably, I find the fights in Hong Kong films to be far more interesting, far more entertaining, far more exciting, far more involving than what's happening in the rest of the world. But now it's all coming together. Now that China has taken over the governing of Hong Kong, all the cinema is beginning to combine, except, I'm happy to say, for Kung Fu Panda 3, and we may do a N1. But if you want to see the difference between martial arts and Kung Fu really clearly, watch Kung Fu Panda 1, 2, and 3. 1, Kung Fu. 2, martial arts. 3, Kung Fu again. And you can see the difference. But that's not what we're going to be completely dwelling on here. But anyway, so yes, when I saw Jackie Chan, I saw not only the great inspiration of Buster Keaton, but I also saw a comic book come to life. I started reading Sherlock Holmes and James Bond, but I also was a voracious comic book reader and ultimately writer and editor, and I loved comic books. And I wanted those to be translated to the cinema properly, which they are being done now, although not so much with so far with some of the more recent DC comic movie adaptations, but certainly virtually all of the Marvel Studios or Marvel Entertainment movie adaptations, they're doing a wonderful job of translating the legitimate thrills that I got as a kid reading comic books. So when I saw Drunken Master, I realized that's Daredevil come to life. And not only is it Daredevil come to life, but it's Daredevil played by Daredevil. In other words, they didn't stop the fight to bring in a stuntman. Jackie Chan did it all. He did the flips, he did the twist, he did the fighting, he did everything. It was all about his physicality. It had what Richard Donner wanted for the original Superman, verisimilitude. And I've never forgotten the thrill of that movie. And that's what I keep looking for in everything, and that's what I want to bring back to movies. And I hope to do that in my own tiny, tiny, tiny way with this podcast.
Let's move to TV real quick, because I think it helps give a perspective of you, which is important for people to come along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
The 60s TV shows you grew up with, Greatest Fighter of the Roberts, Conrad or Vaughn?
Conrad or Vaughn? Absolutely Conrad from the Wild Wild West. Bob Conrad was one of the great screen small screen fighters. However, he was in the cliffhanging serial tradition. He didn't do an enormous amount of smart fighting. He did tough fighting. Usually in a fight, I don't want to see how tough you are. I want to see how smart you are. I don't want to see how you can punish yourself and punish others. I want to see how you can cleverly end a fight in a way that is delightful and interesting, intriguing, and admirable. A lot of people who are fighting now, I don't find admirable. They're fighting. In the World Heavyweight Tai Chi champ, Stephen Watson, who's one of my teachers, always says, if somebody starts a fight, there's something wrong with them. If you start a fight, there's something wrong with you. So when I always like to see smart characters, the character Ming-Na plays on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I don't want to see how tough she is, although I understand why she's trying to prove to others and herself how tough she is. I want to see how smart she is. But I also appreciate that if suddenly she starts showing everybody how smart she is, just like Bruce Lee on the Green Hornet television show, no eyes will be taken off of her. Whenever a fight starts, all eyes will go to her if she starts showing how smart she is. So when I was growing up, it was the Batman television show, Star Trek, of course, with William Shatner doing those big swinging fists, Bob Conrad showing how it's done. But really, the one who was the most interesting, and most people who've ever seen the Green Hornet in the 60s, know it's Bruce Lee. It's always been about Bruce Lee, which was why it was such a crushing disappointment that he wasn't made the star of the Kung Fu television series. And David Carradine, who was a swell fellow, I'll digress because I'll tell you a story. I got to meet David Carradine finally at a Martial Art Hall of Fame ceremony. And we were all at a table doing autographs. And a lot of people were coming up to David with my book, Martial Art Movies from Bruce Lee to the Ninjas, to have him sign the pictures of himself that are in that book. And people were coming up to me, who was further down the line, who was saying, oh, David's reading the stuff you said about him in the book. And it wasn't wildly complimentary. Of course, there was a famous quote from Chuck Norris saying, I'm about as good an actor as David Carradine is a martial artist. So I'm just a little worrying because I don't want to upset. I really admire David Carradine as an actor. He was a really wonderful actor. He didn't know Kung Fu, but he was a great actor. And I feel heat on my cheek, and I look over, and there's David Carradine leaning down, looking at me. And I look at him, and he goes, Myers? And I go, yes. You know the stuff you wrote about me in this book? Yes, sir. It's all true. And then he gave me a big smile, and we got along very well. We've talked several times since then before his sad and untimely death. So, again, it was a shame Bruce Lee didn't get to play that part. From what I also talked to the executive, I worked on the first resurrection of the Twilight Zone television series at CBS. I also worked on Columbo and Murder, She Wrote in a very tangential way when I was out in Hollywood. But I worked on The Twilight Zone, and there was a wonderful producer who went on to produce the resurrection of Battlestar Galactica. His name was Harvey Frand. And Harvey told me that he was the guy who was empowered by CBS, or forced by CBS, to go tell Bruce Lee that he did, or ABC actually, but anyway, he was the executive who had to tell Bruce Lee that he didn't get the Kung Fu part, that he didn't get the part in Kung Fu. And he went to him and said, "I'm really sorry, Bruce, but they decided not to cast you. They don't think your English is strong enough yet." And Bruce, according to Harvey, was so broken up. He says, "But you don't understand what I can do." And he took a feather, put it on the bridge of Harvey's nose, then swung his leg around and took the feather off without touching Harvey's nose. And Harvey went, "Bruce, that's incredible, but still, no, it's not about that." And Harvey even said during that conversation, "I had to agree with CBS, his English just wasn't strong enough." And it still was a crying shame. So did that answer the question? I've completely lost track of the question.
Well, you've whet the appetite, that's for sure. I mean, now we know what's coming up. But let me ask you more specifically before the clock falls on us. exactly what are we going to find on the website, and how soon are you going to be back with the first official AFA?
Well, this is the first official AFA. The second one, I believe, will be a guest based one. I've interviewed several of my friends already in the film business and in the comic business and in the book business, and I've got more scheduled. So I think the second one will come out, I hope, in about 2 weeks. I hope to do these every 2 weeks on Saturdays. Is that the plan, Michael?
I think that's the plan.
That's the plan.
Just like the matinees.
There we go. And James Bond and everything else. Rick Myers and the AFA will return. Anyway, so that one will be in 2 weeks. What you will find, these, as you can tell from this particular podcast, there's a lot of esoteric information with a lot of names being used. So you will find deep background on the website. I will write out all the stories and all the things we weren't able to get to in any particular interview. And also, you'll be able to find a place to ask questions. If what I say and my guests say raise questions, or if we forget something, and you can tell already I get into Escher-like monologues where I forget which way is up, you can remind me of things I've missed, and we will address it on the website. I'll also put in a lot of pictures, background pictures of my guests and the things they've accomplished, and of course, links to where you can find more and find your favorite movies. I'll have affiliations with a variety of different film people. You can also buy my books and get my documentary and all sorts of fun stuff. And maybe, who knows, we might even put in some cartoons or comic strips.
Ooh.
Yeah, I love that stuff.
Well, I can fill in the one part, and that would be the way for people to get in touch, and that would be at Prof Rick, Profric, @actionfilmautopsy.com.
That's right.
I'll reach you.
Leave the K off Rick for karma.
Beautiful. Well,
Wow.
I'm excited. can the next Saturday come fast enough?
No, next two Saturdays. Is one Saturday after next, right?
Okay, Saturday after the next Saturday.
Yes, and you can go onto my website at some point and see what nearly nothing we have there so far.
You're a hell of a promoter.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. I love you.
All right, say goodbye.
All right. Oh, yes, let me do my... I'm going to be testing sign-offs. And so this is going to be my first sign-off. Get ready. Use your blinkers, jackass. Use your blinkers, jackass. That's it.
Okay, break it up. Break it up. For now.
You don't give up, do you?
Listen in next time for more Film Fun Frenzy and Friends. Until then, check out actionfilmautopsy.com, where the excitement never ends.